Blog Talk Radio.
Today, William Macaulay, English author, very famous English author. Charles Wilson, Engine Charlie was called. He was the chief executive officer of General Motors and Secretary of Defense in the Dwight Eisenhower administration. And he made a comment which was misinterpreted. He said, "What's good for General Motors is good for the country." What he meant was that because General Motors was into so many fields, Frigidaire, refrigerators and stoves, appliances, Chevy, Cadillac, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, GMC trucks, Chevy trucks, DuPont, Danoise. They had to eventually, the government forced them to divest DuPont. And then auto parts, that they were so many parts of the economy that if it wasn't good for General Motors, the economy suffered. So he didn't really get a chance to explain that. And, of course, the progressive so-called, the communists, jumped all over him. Just keep in mind, before World War II, the communists were open, and people began to realize how bad they were. And then Hitler attacked Russia in the Operation Barbarossa. And, of course, Uncle Joe Stalin, the dictator, and the mass murder of 30 million people in the starvation of the Ukrainians who oppose collectivization, and William Durante, a Pulitzer Prize winner, and they never took that prize back, incidentally. Uncle Joe Stalin became Uncle Joe and our ally in the fight against Hitler. After World War II, Hitler was defeated, and Stalin's intentions became perfectly clear because the Red Armies had occupied and didn't leave Eastern Europe, Romania, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Bulgaria, all those places, Ukraine. And so the American communists went into the political closet and came out as, quote, progressives. Now, the progressives in American history and American politics were people like Fiorello LaGuardia, George Norris. These were, basically Americans who supported the middle class, the poor, the farmers, the people that couldn't get loans from the banks. They weren't the communists who wanted to socialize and communize everything. So, you got to watch your language, and the media still doesn't do that. Among the other birthdays today, Gene Lockhart, he talking about communism and Nazism, probably his most famous movie was call Northside, not Northside, house on 42nd Street, New York, which was about the Nazis' attempt to steal the secrets of the atomic bomb. And Gene Lockhart played a scientist at one of the labs which was developing the atomic bomb. He was selling secrets. He had a fabulous memory, and he memorized all the developments every day and came out of the facility every day, wrote them down, and gave them to the Nazis. Gene Lockhart, fat little guy, played that role. A guy who was born in Canada, Japanese, there were Japanese who were Canadians. He came to the United States during before we entered the war in World War II, S.I. Hayakawa. Samuel Icho, I think it was. And this is interesting. Here's a guy, Japanese, after Pearl Harbor, or Japanese ethnicity. He went to Chicago and worked for a black newspaper called the Chicago Defender. He was not interned like a lot of American-born Japanese, Sensei, Nisei, were interned in Manzanar and places like that. After Hayakawa was a semanticist, and he wrote a book or two on semantics. He later was appointed by Ronald Reagan to be president of San Francisco State University here in San Francisco. There was a student riots during that period. I remember I was driving by in my new car, and a piece of concrete or brick came out, thrown at my windshield. Hayakawa was famous because he went to one of the student protests and pulled the wires out of a PA system. That made Hayakawa famous, so he ran for U.S. Senator on the Republican ticket. Interestingly, Hayakawa married an American, a Blanco, and they had, I think, two or three kids. One of the kids went to Reed College in Oregon and became a student dissident. Hayakawa later died, but this is interesting about, you know, here's the guy who, Japanese, who escaped being sent to the internment camps and later became a U.S. senator. And he was so old, they used to call him Sleeping Sam. He would go to sleep during sessions. He died recently. Another communist, the foreign secretary or foreign minister of Stalin's administration, Khrushchev's administration, Andrei Gromyko, born on this day. Let's see, Harriet Nelson, remember Ozzy and Harriet? And then one of the Nelson kids, Ricky Nelson, later became a singer and died in a plane crash. Red Skelton, a great comedian, his birthday. Another Canadian, Hume Cronin. A lot of movies that he starred in. One of his most famous was, I forgot him, but he played a warden in one of them, a brutal warden in one film, and then he played in his wife was Jessica Tandy. They were born in Ontario, Canada, and then immigrated like a lot of actors to Hollywood. And The Seventh Cross, that was a famous film that he starred in with Spencer Tracy. Great film. Nelson Mandela, born on this day. Now, a lot of people think that he was a communist, and this is his birthday. And his wife did some horrible things to people that she thought was betraying her. And Nelson Mandela recently died. John Glenn, who was a Marine, U.S. Marine colonel, and later one of our first astronauts, and then ran for Senate from the state of Ohio. I think he's still living. Gonzo Hunter Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Los Angeles. He was born today. And if you remember the 60s, the great Martha and the Vandellas, her birthday. Among the deaths today, Horatio Alger, and that was a famous book for young boys who wanted to succeed and become very wealthy. Horatio Alger was also supposed to be gay. Let's see, Carl Menninger, who started the Menninger Clinic and was famous for his, he was a physician, very competent. He was famous for his work on, I think, mental illness. He died of cancer, 93 years old. Among the, since this is the 100th anniversary of World War I, we had the Great Battle of the Marne in First World War. The United States and France began that battle, and it was the beginning of turning around of the German successes in the field. And eventually, in November of 1918, Germany agreed to an armistice and later admitted it was defeated. Set the stage for World War II. In 1872, we're going back, Britain devised the secret ballot for voting. Before that time, a lot of people would, who had other interests in mind, control the votes that were the people voted for, those who could vote in England. Women could not vote until the early, well, I think in 1920, Miss Pankhurst and other women's advocates finally forced the British government to grant vote to women. 1914, the Army Air Service became the Signal Corps. In 1932, the United States signed an agreement with Canada to start the work on the St. Louis Seaway. Now, what that was the to open up the sea to the Great Lakes, so ships could come in from the sea and come all the way up to Minnesota and into Chicago. And General Philip Berrigan, who I knew. He was the chief engineer for this, and they worked out of Chicago. And Berrigan, before that, was the deputy, number two man, at Normandy in charge of the Mulberry bridges. Those are the bridges that were prefabricated and towed over to Normandy to speed up the disembarkation of military equipment so we could defeat the Nazis. Here is the interview I did, part of the interview, part of audio archives of General Berrigan, the American chief engineer for the St. Louis Seaway.
I was in San Francisco, and I had 4 years to do. And I thought I was living in this house, and I thought, I'm going to retire in San Francisco. And the chief called me up and said, listen, you got decorated by England, France, and Belgium. I have another international job. And I said, what is it? And he says, it's the Niagara Falls, really.
Okay.
And he says, it's the job with Canada. And I want you to go take over the division in Chicago. See, I had the division here that included districts in San Francisco. Now the divisions in Chicago included the Great Lakes, the district in Chicago and Buffalo and another district up the north and the
northeast.
Northwest, you know, Lake Superior. And it was a very interesting job of remodeling Niagara Falls. The Canadians.
Were they easy to work with?
Oh, terrific. And we both had the same idea. You see, that the international boundary goes right through Niagara Falls. And the falls had all the water going, in fact, 85% of the water went through the middle quarter of the falls where the international boundary went across. And what we did was to both go on our side of the international boundary and flatten that. We sandbagged so we got away from the water, but we made the elevation of the edge of where the water would go as the same as the elevation in the middle of the horseshoe. So that we spread the thing about so that Niagara Falls is maybe instead of a quarter of a mile in the middle of the falls, it was 2 or 3 miles long. And a particularly made it very pretty, beautiful, and we actually generated more power. In other words, we put more power through the powerhouse because all that water is going through the middle of the falls. And for the show, you couldn't divert much more than they were diverting, whereas if you spread it out for a little bit of water, maybe only 6 inches of water going over the edge, and then diverting more for power, making equal amount of power on the Canadian and the United States side.
So for once, everything got shared.
It had to be that way. In other words, it was very logical that we wanted it to be that way. It was a fair thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I can get on an environmental thing, General, with the ships, foreign ships coming into through the St. Lawrence Seaway, into the Great Lakes. They bring in bacteria and plant life that's not indigenous to the continental United States, and I understand their problems now. Could that have been avoided?
I don't think that's the idea for us. There are different problems from what we were doing. Mm-hmm. That was the problem of the health department in that
Of course, we weren't that environmentally conscious then, were we?
Well, it wasn't our responsibility. That was mm-hmm. something that was the public health department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because this is just starting to crop up in being from the Midwest myself, these Russian ships especially, they said, brought in stuff that was not, indigenous to the United States, and now they're concerned yeah. that these animals will get a foothold here. What did you do after the sea wave?
Well, it was a longer interview I did with Bergen. It's the only one he ever did, and ironically, he worked on the clean water program here in San Francisco and trying to clean up our water and also provide water, plenty of water for this area. And it's too bad he's dead now, but he was buried in the Presidio. But one of the major problems here in California, nobody understands we have all this water in our bays, San Francisco Bay, and we have the Pacific Ocean, but nobody's talking about desalination, and we'll get to that another day. Now, also on this day in 1936, after the Spanish Republic government, the Alfonso XIII was the last Spanish king, was related to Queen Victoria, and that whole, that's what people used to joke about, 500 years of incest with these royal houses. Anyway, he abdicated, and then there was a Republican government, which was kind of communist, I guess some people would call it that. There was labor unrest in the Asturias, and La Pasionaria, famous fiery woman, she was a postulant in one of the convents. She became radicalized and called her. They called her La Pasionaria. She made the famous statement: "It's better to die on your feet than to be a slave on your knees." And she was embraced communism. General Franco was in the Spanish army. He was stationed in, I think, the Canary Islands, and Hitler and Mussolini backed him, gave him planes to fly the Nationalist Army to Spain to fight the Republicans. And eventually Texaco provided gasoline to Franco for his tanks. The Germans sent the Luftwaffe over there to bomb places like Guernica. And the Russians had the Abraham Lincoln Brigade to fight the Nationalists, but eventually the Nationalists and Franco won. Franco, ironically, was never accepted by the West. He was also looked upon as a fascist dictator. Hitler, when Hitler started World War II, Hitler wanted some to be repaid for sending the Condor Legion, which was the German military, to aid Franco. And Franco, they had a meeting at Hendenay, which is near the French border. Hitler and Franco met, and Franco wouldn't budge on anything. Franco, incidentally, was supposed to have Jewish heritage blood. So it's very interesting. But anyway, Hitler said after meeting with Franco and not getting what he wanted, Hitler said, "I'd rather have all my teeth pulled out than to deal with this guy again." Anyway, Franco decided to throw a few bodies to the cause, and there was the Blue Legion that the Spanish sent to fight with the Nazis, the Wehrmacht, to fight the Russians. And Mussolini also sent some troops to aid Hitler in Operation Barbarossa, the attempt to defeat the Soviet armies. And I think the Italian armies, the Italian brigades or divisions, were also fought at Stalingrad. That's not well known. There's a famous cult movie documenting that. Also on this day, 1938, we had an Irishman who decided he was going to fly, or told everybody he was going to fly from New York to California. Instead, he ended up in Ireland, so he got the name Wrong Way Corrigan. He didn't join Amelia Earhart, and I don't think she wanted anything to do with him. She would have, well, maybe. She probably would be alive, or would have been alive, had he been her navigator. Well, maybe. 1942, back to the Nazis, the first jet fighter was developed. It was the M, E-262, the Messerschmitt. In 1955, we had the first election, which grouped up here then. Some mistake here. Sorry about that. The first energy from atomic produced from nuclear material was commercially produced and sold. 1965, on this day, with the notorious Chappaquiddick, the Bridge of Chappaquiddick drowning of Mary Jo Kopechne, which Ted Kennedy was in the car with her. The car went off the bridge for some reason. Mary Jo Kopechne couldn't get out of the car, Ted Kennedy claimed that he couldn't save her and couldn't pull her out. There was a space of I think a couple hours when the Kennedy family's lawyers came on the scene and tried to explain the situation. Mary Jo Kopechne drowned. Ted Kennedy is dead, married a couple of times, very controversial. He ran for president or tried to get the presidential nomination from the Democrats but never got it, and that always hung over his head, the incident at Chappaquiddick. And also on this day, in 1870, the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican, declared that in matters of faith and morals, the Pope was infallible. And, of course, this issue has just come up with the Anglicans, decided that the women could become bishops. And this is there was supposed to be the reunification or the reintegration of the Anglican Church into the Roman Catholic Church. And now that doesn't look like that's going to happen. And, of course, there was a British historian, I think his name was Wilson, who left the Anglican Church calling it the High Church of Sodomy because of all the things that go on with their priests. And he became a Roman Catholic. This is interesting. Now, among the other issues that have come up is this guy, Jose Vargas, a Filipino citizen who, not through his own fault, he was 12 or 14 years old when he came over here. He falsified, he didn't get try to get his status clarified or legalized when he had the chance when he was 18. He falsified documents, tried to get a driver's license using false information, I think in the state of Washington, got a couple of jobs, one at the San Francisco Chronicle and other papers, Washington Post. And, of course, for some reason, they gave the Pulitzer Committee gave him a Pulitzer Prize. Now, a lot of people, they think Pulitzer Prize and, oh, bow down and salute and all of that. But nobody, excuse that muffler, there's nothing I can do about that. Nobody looks at who are the members of the Pulitzer Prize Committee, what's their background. And one of the interesting things is they have several scandals. People they gave prizes to, and it turns out that these guys were plagiarists or they falsified fictionalized books, information, things like that. Walter Durante is among the worst. He concealed Stalin's extermination of 30 million people back in the 30s because the Ukrainians and others wouldn't cooperate with Stalin's decision to collectivize all the private farms. Walter Durante was the New York Times correspondent in Moscow. Stalin did to co-opt him and gave him a houseboy, and you can draw your own conclusions from that. Durante did not have a wife, not with him at that time. I don't know if he was ever married. Stalin provided him with a chauffeur, a car, and all the vodka and drugs. And Durante covered up this mass extermination of the kulaks who refused to embrace Stalin's collectivization of their farms. And the Pulitzer Prize people at that time gave Durante and the New York Times a Pulitzer Prize, and they never took it back, even though this horrible deed is irrefutable. There were other, the Washington Post, they had a black woman there who falsified information about a young girl who was in the housing projects in Washington, and she died of crack cocaine. That was a fiction. We had another case at the New York Times recently where a guy falsified information. He got the Pulitzer Prize, and now we got this guy Vargas. nobody looks at who are the members of the Pulitzer Prize, and it turns out, Pulitzer Prize Committee, and it turns out that these people are self-perpetuating. They choose themselves and their own members. And it's the same media people. You have the Associated Press. That woman's been there many years. You have the Washington Post, the New York Times, and other. And then you have occasional, what I call, well, there's one or two house blacks. It's essentially the same committee. And nobody, you know, the public does not have input into how this, the procedures and how these winners, so-called, are selected. And, you know, so somebody probably is writing a book on exposing this scam, because that's what it's beginning to look like, that it's, you know, just a lot of puffery, given the fact that all these people who are getting the awards, the people that, who are getting the awards, the Pulitzer Committee, are getting awards from people who are their employers of the newspapers, Washington Post, New York Times, that sort of thing. So we will, and we're going to, I did promise you one of the things that are problems is this, we have the MS-13 terrorist group, which is becoming involved in this illegal migration of children. And here is somebody, this is the interview of somebody who was from El Salvador and studied to be a military cadet. And he, this is a brief discussion of the origin of MS-13.
What? How long were you in that military school?
The age of like 3 until the age of
3
when I came here.
Yeah,
basic. You start preschool and all that.
Oh,
I mean, but
do you have to wear a uniform or anything?
Just some simple like slacks, blue shirts, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Did they provide it? Was that provided by the school?
I mean, it's all part of what was somewhat given to you. I mean, it's better than sitting around doing nothing. I mean, because you're a kid in El Salvador. I mean, some kids go to work with their parents. Others have nothing to do.
Was there any liberal arts in the curriculum?
Not, man.
So did you do your art?
Not here. I didn't have art.
Oh, I love it.
I didn't know what the fuck painting was until I came here.
We won't edit that out.
Well, we'll be back Monday, and we'll continue with part two of the MS, the expose of MS-13 and why this is so important. Have a safe weekend, and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS YouTube, and there'll be more on there. And we'll end with our usual politics and poker. Maybe more of these politicians should play poker, even the women.
Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you 5. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you gonna do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, what to bet,
where to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your
let's get this done.
Why, Michael Fajicinkovich, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot, that's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker. Play your own pot, that's me.
We didn't get a chance to do the rest of this, the AIDS-contaminated blood issue. Some of these flaky San Francisco gay politicians and those in the closet want a waiver on the ability of gay people to donate blood, and that's how we got HIV and AIDS in the blood transfusion system to begin with. Also, some San Francisco voters are tired of the bicycle propagandists and their non-accountability. We'll get into that Monday. So have a safe weekend. This is Peter Paul Rizzola. Good night.